Yeah. Well, he's going to start, and then we'll talk anything you want to talk. We're going to put some music on, and then we're going to fucking talk. This will take you back here.
This show is brought to you by ScoreBig. Baseball season just started. Basketball season's ending. Hockey season's ending. You're going to want to go see games. Next time you go to see any game or show, go to ScoreBig first and see how much you can save. Go to scorebig.com right now and click on the microphone. It's right at the top. It has a red background. And enter the promo code Joey. That's J-O-E-Y. And you'll save an extra $20 off of your first order. That's scorebig.com and enter the promo code Joey. Show is also brought to you by Headspace.com. Go to Headspace.com/Joey right now and download the free Headspace app and begin their Take 10 program for 10 days of guided meditation. That's Headspace.com/Joey and download the brand new Headspace app. And the show is brought to you by Onnit.com. Go to Onnit.com and use code word CHURCH to get 10% off all of the great optimization products. Alpha Brain, New Mood, TrimTech Immune, TrimTech Sport. And I am about a week into their Dolce Whey, the banana almond. It's delicious. Go check that out. It's Onnit.com, promo code CHURCH.
What? Big shout out to my main man. Lower my fucking mic there. Lower that thing. It's too hot. There you go. There you go. What? 1-2. 1-2. Oh, shit. It's Wednesday, bitches. Little shout out to Bobby Sharon sending me Street Songs by Rick James. Here you go, motherfuckers. Oh, shit. You hear those? You hear that shit? When you're on the top, there's no place. Are you fucking kidding me? Down, down, down. If you're not getting up, fucking ripping your clothes off, jumping up and down. Oh shit. Oh shit. Oh shit. This is smooth right here. You're over at Biggie Smalls Club and American Gangster. Oh shit. Oh shit. What are you gonna do, Lee? We gotta open up one of these clubs in Israel and get these motherfuckers started. It's the Church of What's Happening Now, bitches. Wednesday, April 6th. What's going on?
What's happening, brother?
I can't call it Herb Dean in house today. I always called you Herb Dean. It's Herb Dean.
Herb. It's Herb Dean. Herb.
Whatever the fuck. I'm terrible. What's going on with you, Lee Cyan?
Had a great morning. I went and worked out a little bit, did a little work. It's great.
You're looking good. Give him the crab on camera.
The crab?
Give him the crab.
Do I have to stand up for the crab?
Sure. All right. What the fuck? Give him the crab. Show him who they're fucking with. Oh, shit. Oh, shit. Smooth.
You got to do it every once in a while.
That's right. Let these motherfuckers know who's running things, you know?
Yeah, it's like, I wanted to tell you, I texted my friend who didn't get back to me. And he didn't respond to the text, but I put it out there again. Last week we were talking about just losing touch with
friends.
Did
you call his fucking wife?
No, I didn't call the wife.
Call the wife. Stop texting this fucking half a fag and call the fucking wife. Explain your situation. Say that you don't know what's going on. You text him. You didn't know if he got hit by a car and you're worried about him. Then they'll tell you what's going on. If she don't call you back, then send them a fuck you letter and say, go fuck yourself and your faggy friend. You took my friend from me, you little dirty bitch, and move on with your life.
How was your day?
Tremendous. But it happened. Lee, it happened. So a man... Listen, man, a woman will tell you a man will fucking snake a woman along to the wedding date, and then rules change. And people have to accept it. When people get married, that college shit goes away. That thing is, my mic is too high here in my ears.
I think it's just your ears.
You know, it's tough to stay friends when you have children, a marriage, a job,
right,
loans. You're trying to work on something. God forbid you're trying to work on something. If you just have a job, 40 hours, and a girlfriend that you see four nights a week, what time do you have? You have 3 nights. Those 3 nights you got to work out. You got to clean your apartment. You got to do laundry. How much time do you have to go to a bar and hang out? You can't get drunk no more on a Tuesday. When I was 21, I could drink 92 beers and snort 84 lines on a Tuesday and be up Wednesday ready to fucking stab a motherfucker. If I have a beer now on a Sunday, I don't recover till Wednesday. I don't drink.
Yeah, it's not as fun anymore.
It's not that it's not as fun. Everybody tries to
keep it going.
Keep it going.
But yeah, yeah, I know what you mean.
Your body falls apart eventually, you know? I saw somebody last night at the Comedy Store. I didn't recognize him. I hadn't seen him in 10 years, but I didn't recognize him. And they had alcohol on their breath. They, you know, they never stopped drinking.
That's crazy. It can change someone's body. It can change how you look. It can
change everything. They were swollen. Their nose got bigger. Their face got bigger. You know, it's whatever. You can't live that lifestyle forever. You know, you have a girlfriend. You have responsibilities. You can't go to a fucking bar and cause problems. You know, it's always the same. And people don't accept it. That's it. People get busy.
Yeah, yeah, I've had some friends like that.
You fucking work on the weekends, okay? Yeah. You have a plane ride that starts on Friday.
Right.
And you don't come home till Sunday. And that's out of 52 weeks, let's do an estimate of 40 weeks or 45.
No way, 40.
At least.
40 to 45 weekends he works.
Yeah, yeah.
He's gone. So he basically has 4 days a week to make it happen because Sundays are a wrap. Sundays are a wrap. You get off the plane. You don't sleep in hotels like that. You don't get 9 hours in a fucking hotel. Either it's too warm, it's too hot, the pillow, it don't feel good. Ba-ba-da-bing, ba-ba-da-bang. So you really sleep shitty one night, you recover the next.
No, but that's one thing, though, is I can sleep just about anywhere. I sleep on the planes really good.
I see you on the plane.
Yeah.
Fucking nod
out,
right out.
Out, yeah.
But still, sleeping on the plane is like sleeping on the fucking Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
Okay, so when you get home on a Sunday, it's a wash. You're tired.
Yeah, I just want to relax. Have a
you
relax. Dinner.
You got the girls. The wife asked you 20 fucking questions. You got to answer emails from the fucking weekend. You know.
Actually, no, the girls no more. So I'm an empty nester. My daughter's moved out.
Really?
Yeah. Uh huh. Yeah, yeah. So my son, he's been hasn't been living with me for a while. He lives with his mom though. And then my daughter, 19 years old. They're out.
All right. Doing
their thing. Yeah, one. They're not really out. They're like, okay, so. They live with their aunts. One with her mom's sister. The other one lives with my sister.
Okay.
And they're doing their thing. One, you know, she's going to school and has a job. The other one just got a job and trying to see if I can keep her out of trouble.
That's tough.
Yeah.
That's tough. It's tough, man. Work job. But the point is that you have 4 days.
Yeah.
You have 4 days to make it happen, Herb Dean, every week. You don't have seven like most people. You have four here. So you have four workouts. You probably have obligations.
Yeah, I got my projects. You know,
you have your little things going on, and then somebody wants to call you at 2 in the afternoon and do lunch.
Yeah, yeah, I got lots of projects.
And you're like, it's right in the middle of my fucking day. Once I do lunch, after lunch, what do you want to do? You want to take a fucking nap? So these are the things. You get busy.
Well, I hear you, Joey, talking a lot about, I actually can do some work on the road because you don't have some of those distractions. Do you get some of that done on the road? Like, what is your day like, Herb, on the road before the fights? Because the fight day is pretty much all day, but if you're there a day or so early.
Right. So, yeah, you're actually right. Sometimes I am able to get some of that work done. Sometimes I just sit in the hotel room. I go through the emails, answer the emails. I do scheduling stuff. I do work I'm supposed to do, you know, that I don't want to do at home. So, yeah, actually it's good for it sometimes.
I do the same. I bring a computer with me that's not a great computer, so I don't trust it to do something tremendously large on it. I trust it to tweet and maybe Facebook and maybe check my messages. I don't fuck with that lit lift in there. When I write, I don't fuck with it in there because for some reason something goes wrong and then I'm fucked. But when I go, I got 3-4 hours in the hotel room to sit and write comedy. You know, if I'm thinking of a TV show and I'm writing it, I'll do it then. I like all that stuff. Tell you where else I stretch out, believe it or not, on a plane. Those long flights, I come fucking prepared, though. I got everything in that bag. Everything I need. You know what I'm saying? Everything. I'll bring the sides with me to go over if I have an audition.
Now, so you can work well on the plane.
I'll throw that computer on and check messages, and I'll go on the plane with a project. Every time I go on a flight longer than 3 hours, I know I'm not going to sleep. So I have a project. But if I got on a plane and fucking Rocky is on, you know, Creed, that throws my plan off, like the last flight I got on. On the way back, I usually don't plan nothing because I'm fried from the night before.
Yeah, so no, me on the plane, I can't work on the plane. I try. Sometimes I bring it. Every now and then I'm able to get a little bit in. But I can probably get in about 20 minutes here, 20 minutes there. As soon as I start concentrating on a plane, it puts me to sleep.
I had a friend whose dad was a consultant and went to Europe, like back and forth from Boston to Europe every week. And he said that was the only time he got work done because no one could call him.
On the best writing you'll do And that's what works for me. I get high on a plane. Like before I get on the plane, I get pretty stoned. I eat an edible. I eat the breakfast. I focus. And then I take the notebook out and I leave it open. I take the thing out. I leave the notebook open with a pen and I watch whatever's going on when I play music.
Mm-hmm.
And I let the music or whatever I'm watching dictate what I'm writing. Are you with
me? No, okay. No,
and sometimes I'll get a joke. Sometimes, let's say I got to write a letter to Phil Foley. I'll write it on the plane. You know, my buddy's in college. He's doing some time at a college somewhere, so I have to write him letters. In fact, I owe him one. You know, I plan all those things.
Do you have, like, a different style or a different band for each activity? Like, is comedy one music? Is writing another music?
No, I just put an album on. And I'll listen to it. You know, listen, man, I love music.
Right.
I love music. You know, I was trying to push a music show, but music is very tough to sell. We live in an age that right now, if I'm driving and I go, Doug, when was the last time you heard Aretha Franklin? What was the song we played last week? I forgot all about that song. We played Aretha Franklin last week.
I'm blanking on the name.
Fucking song from 71. Just tremendous. I hadn't heard it since my mother had the bar in fucking Harlem.
Right, right.
You know, I hadn't heard that song. I mean, I was driving with my wife, and I heard it on Sirius. In today's world...
What song is it?
Let me look it up.
Oh, you got to hear this fucking thing. This is Aretha.
Yeah, but you know something? Yeah, you're right. If you're doing creative stuff, you can... Yeah, on the plane is a good time.
Sometimes I get so caught up in the... in the music that I realize how brilliant the music I'm listening to is and how much effort they had to put into this music that inspires me.
Yeah.
Like, I start thinking about how...
Rocksteady?
Go ahead.
Oh,
put it on.
That's a great song.
Listen to this shit. When was the last time you heard Rocksteady. This song? This is just a fucking amazing song.
Oh, no, she goes in.
Come on. I get tears. This will never happen again. This will never happen again. Ever. I could see her just the way she's singing opposite the beat. That's what's killing it. Listen to her.
And she's riding it a little bit to the back.
Yeah.
Like what she's riding it to the back. Yeah.
And then she drops on Aretha Franklin right here. All right. I'm on the plane listening to this. And I'm thinking, listen to how sick my mind is, people. I want to learn where you got the balls to come up with this, okay? I cry. I want to know where the fuck you got the balls. So I think of the black composer who put this together, right? Because that's all Aretha Franklin worked at. This is funk. Do you think it's a dude that looked like this?
She never worked with the Swampers?
Well, you know, I'm just thinking to myself, like, who came up? Like, who came up to Aretha Franklin? Was it some dude that looked like Puff? With glasses, or was it some bad black motherfucker that came into the studio with alcohol on his motherfucking breath? And he just said, Rita, come here for a second. And she's like, I ain't got time for this. He's like, listen, you got to hear this funk I came up with. And he just started with this bass. That's what I think about. Who created this bass line? It wasn't some fucking genius.
Aretha Franklin wrote it.
Yeah. Oh, no.
According to...
Well, some dude she pays for.
Did it say who played on it?
Let me look for it.
You know, that dude came in and said, Aretha, listen to this motherfucking shit I got here.
So I was just in Memphis not too long ago. So I went to the Stax Museum. You ever go to that?
No.
Oh, you have to go to the Stax Museum. So it's Stax Records, right? You know Stax.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Hold on. Now I know what you're saying.
Okay. So baby. Stax Records. So basically, you know, it's a more Southern soul. So there's like Motown out of Detroit, and then there's Memphis Stax. Man, if you're ever in Memphis, you got to go.
Now, who was on the Stax list?
Okay, so I think Aretha Franklin did some stuff on there. I'm not sure exactly, but I think she did. But definitely Isaac Hayes, Sam and Dave, Otis Redding, you know, Booker T and the MGs. I said Isaac Hayes, a few other people. So all that stuff was on Stax. And it's a, you know, it's definitely interesting. You learn a lot. So they did that whole, who was those girls? The Nets. No, those girls who, they did that song. They did songs with Earth, Wind, and Fire. Earth, Wind, and Fire was out of there. Record. Came out of there, yeah. But they did songs with Earth, Wind, and Fire. And they did that big concert down in Watts after the riots, Watts Stax. It's a lot of stuff to learn about in that museum.
All that stuff. There's a documentary on Muscle Shoals on Netflix. And I saw part of it on the plane. That was pretty interesting about what bands have gone through Muscle Shoals.
Now, did Aretha ever do anything with them?
I think so, because there's something on there. Look for Aretha and I think Dwayne Allman. Yeah. Listen to this shit.
Yeah.
Somebody sent me this on Twitter last week, and I had never known this existed. And it sounds great. Aretha Franklin's tremendous. So, yeah, this is when Aretha, you know, with fucking Dwayne Allman. How do you get that combination together?
Oh, yeah.
This is crazy shit. With Dwayne Allman?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a couple of them on there. There's a couple of jams on there.
It's called The Wait.
So, yeah, there's just so much music history that there is to be. Like, I would plan a trip around Muscle Shoals.
Really?
Yeah, my wife would go. My wife would do it in a heartbeat. With the baby, she would do it in a fucking heartbeat. That's more of an education. Just going through there and sniffing that fucking air. Are you kidding me?
So, do they have a museum or anything like that down there that shows about the studio?
I'm not sure what goes on down there.
Is that in Alabama?
Yes. The Stones were there. Like, just a lot of people went in there. You want to smell those motherfuckers. It's like when you go to the Comedy Store, that's Richard Pryor's stage. Just breathing that air does something to you. You know, it does something to you.
So you were saying, like, that the music show was difficult to pitch. Like,
what was your show?
Since the music is so great, like, what is so difficult?
So many copyright companies, so many different. So when you have an album, it's not about the album. It's the different writers on every song. So all I need is one writer on one song to say, I don't want my song on that fucking show, and I can't do the album on the show. Okay. But the beauty of it is that we live in a society now where if I could listen to that song, I could go on my thing, and on Sirius, it says the song and who did it. So I'll say Rocksteady and Aretha Franklin. At the next light, I could go on my iPhone, go to iTunes, and buy the fucking song, okay, and not really get the essence of the album.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no.
Every album has an essence.
You know, that's something I've been doing a lot lately.
So sometimes in my morning, like in the mornings, people, I twit songs out. That's all great, Joey, but you're not doing nothing for me. Because to really get the full experience of that song, you got to see what comes before and after. When I play a song, it's like me giving you the scene from The Godfather when he shoots fucking the guy at the table, Michael Corleone goes to Sicily. You can't watch a movie like that. An album is a fucking movie. And the bands, like, again, and you guys are going to go, fuck you, Joey, you're an old fuck. I'm telling you that these bands listen to the thought process they had into the covers. There's also a thought process on how the music comes up, how they want you to hear it, what they want you to hear before that song and after that fucking song. And Pink Floyd definitely did, as we heard today with Animals.
That's a concept
they
album.
They just, you know, they filled it together. I've always felt that, you know, I heard a fucking great song this morning. You guys are going to laugh at me. What's the chick that won Miss America and they stopped her from eating pussy? She was married to Rick Fox from the Lakers. Come on, fucking guys.
I don't know.
Running back to you. Baby, do the good things. Oh, they're going to love that. Share to you.
Vanessa Williams?
Vanessa Williams. Mm-hmm. Vanessa Williams put an album out in 1991, right? Somebody gave it to me. Like, somebody gave me Vanessa Williams. I always thought Vanessa Williams was fucking beautiful. I just love that. That's what a Cuban woman looks like. When they're mixed like that, they got that mulatto blood. I love all that shit. They do. That's what you call them, mulattoes. That's what they're called in Cuba. Esa mujer es mulata. That's what they're called. So I put the fucking CD in the car. Out of all the music, I liked Vanessa Williams' album. I don't know why. And it's that album that had Running Back to You and...
I'm gonna go revisit it. I do remember she did have an album.
One thing about that album was it was all themed. That album was a concept, like she wrote about love or whatever she was singing about in that fucking album, her revenge or her freedom. You know, Pat Benatar, Crimes of Passion. Listen to that fucking album. Listen to that side one. That's planned. The last song is a song you hate. Hell is for Children. Remember, you hate. That's the last song on the album.
You know, the album was called the Marvin Gaye with "I Want You" on it. Which I think.
Oh yeah. Because
you know,
yeah.
You listen to the best of.
Yes.
But then you go back. Like I just went and listened to that album. A couple of weeks on a plane. On a plane, you know, I bought it before
you
I got on the plane.
You don't have time. You don't have time in your normal life. So what I do on a plane is I go to YouTube, mm-hmm. I plug the speaker in, and I listen to a whole album. And I go, wow, that was fucking tremendous. Something we have forgotten in this country. Listen to the whole album. Well, now there's not thought. Now it's all about money. You got 8 songs? That's why this chick has a song every 6 weeks. She sucks a dick. The skinny blonde with the fucking disease. What's her name?
Is it? I want to say Taylor, but it's
Taylor Dane. Whatever. Taylor Swift.
Taylor Swift.
She's got a disease.
You know, yeah, whatever the fuck. You got to assume she's got a disease. She's always skinny and pale, and she got sores on her lips. She's got something. You know what I'm saying? She blew one of those dirty fucking actors or something.
I never knew that.
He's brutal.
I never knew that albums were like an entire theme, or I thought it was just songs put together. Because they like the songs. I didn't. So if you listen to like the songs that we listened to before on Periscope, is it different for you if you only listen to one song versus the whole album? Do you feel different?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And there's music like the Stones. The Stones did location fucking music. So the Stones would call each other and go, hey, it's time for another album, boys. What do you want to do? I don't know. Let's go down to Jamaica and hang out with Peter Tosh. And we'll hang out down there, smoke dope, we'll rent the house, and we'll fucking do an album down there. So, it's the feeling that they were thinking during those 8 songs. Yeah, if you're a real music guru and you go back, you'll find out that sometimes they'll put 7 songs together and they had 2 songs in the previous album that the company will make them put on there for filler or something like that. But the essence of those 7 songs, you'll feel. You'll see what songs don't belong there. And you know whose point? He did it beautifully. Marvin Gaye. When Marvin Gaye released I Want You, that was a piece of fucking Marvin Gaye that was the best Marvin Gaye. So all those songs on that album, that's the best Marvin Gaye.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the better Marvin Gaye was the one the one before that, I think.
Sexual feeling,
whatever.
No, that was after.
Sexually. That was after.
I think before that was like, you know, stuff like The Ecology.
Right.
Yeah.
I'll tell you who else did a lot of albums that if you listen to, we get cheated. The youth of today gets cheated. Stevie Wonder. Stevie Wonder put out 4 songs, 4 albums in Motown towards the end of Motown that they're like Pink Floyd's strength.
Mm-hmm.
Ending with songs in the Key of Life in 76.
Right.
Ending with a double album. Okay, so if you don't buy those albums whole and listen to them, you know, there's just some people, Judas Priest, British Steel. Judas Priest, British Steel is a fucking phenomenal album. You know, Breaking the Law, the other one, then one goes into the other one, Metal Gods. It's fucking brilliant.
Does it matter if you don't like a song on an album? Like, let's say it's your favorite album, but one song you just hate. Will you still listen to it, or does it affect your opinion of the album, or not really?
No. Listen, man, listen. When I put an album out, not all the jokes you're gonna like, not all the fucking jokes. All
right, right.
You're not
gonna
like all the goddamn jokes. So, but there's gonna be 6 to 7 jokes that you're gonna go, oh, I get this now. He was talking about this as a theme. When I'm trying to write an album out, first thing I gotta write on a piece of paper is what am I trying to say. What am I trying to say with this album? If you watch the 70s on CNN, Motown was putting out a particular sound for years. And fucking your boy went in there and said, listen, I'll fucking put it out, but I don't want to use the Bam Brothers no more. I don't want four brothers behind me fucking jigging it up. I don't want that. I want to tell you what's in my heart. And he put that song out about the war. Marvin Gaye.
Uh-huh, yeah, yeah.
What's the first one?
Not
Mercy, Mercy.
What's
going on? Mm-hmm. And that broke the bank. That broke the bank. That invaded thought. You know, he spoke about the war and all this shit. Stevie Wonder went into Motown and said, hey, I want to do what he's doing. I don't want none of this shit, little Stevie Wonder no more. I'm a grown fucking man. I've eaten pussy. I've smoked dope. I'm just blind. That's it. But let me do it my way. And he did his four albums. You know, they wanted to break out of the mold. That was their mold for them. And by that time, mm-hmm. who cared? Michael Jackson was about to fucking sizzle the goddamn fucking world anyway in 1971. So, and he broke the bank with that first album, ABC, What I Want You Back and all that shit. But we don't do that no more. We're so accustomed to Sirius. Hey, listen, man. I'm the first guy that fought in the car. I have Sirius on there, and I fucking love it. I got Disco 54. I got Groove Channel 50, which is that medium range. I got metal shit. I got Ozzy's Boneyard, and I got Lithium. I'm good to go. Lithium is Soundgarden, Alice in Chains, that era. And I listen to individual songs.
So. You know, speaking of music, I would be slipping if I didn't tell you. My son just put out an EP. It's on Bandcamp.
Are you serious?
Yeah, Altadena Hotel. He's doing all the guitar on it mainly, and it's kind of like an indie pop thing. It's good stuff though, man. Man, he writes good music. The name of the band is Altadena Hotel.
That's a complete different fucking gift, writing music and doing all that type of shit.
Yeah,
do that.
I don't know how he comes up with this stuff. Like, he'll teach me some of his songs. Like, how did you think of that? Yeah, how did you put that together, you know?
It was very interesting. Before the show, you were speaking about the show Vinyl, and I only saw the first episode, but they were talking about the main manager had one of his first clients was a black client who he like screwed out of. Like, they made him go under like a pseudonym, and they wouldn't let him record the songs he wanted to record.
Right, they made him play Little Jimmy Little, so they made him play like, you know, Buddy Holly, This motherfucker could shred a guitar and play blues.
Right.
So now he comes back. Now he's a manager. He became a manager of a fucking punk band. But they fired two of the punk rockers, and they can't come up with a song. And in one scene, this guy fucking goes, give me the fucking guitar. The white dude goes, what? The black dude goes, give me the fucking guitar. He takes that Stratocaster from him, and he goes, A-B-E, E-B-I, whatever, A-B-E. These chords have lit the world on fire, and he starts playing every song that's those three chords.
Mm-hmm.
Like, every song that's been written with those three chords. He goes, this is how it starts. And he's singing all of them. And all of a sudden, he just goes into this blues song. Mm-hmm. And it rips the room apart. And he puts the guitar down. He goes, figure it the fuck out. And he walks out of the room. Kid comes upstairs and goes, hey, man, all those songs you did in EBI, those are somebody else's songs. But that last song, who wrote that? And that's how that's... So now he's going to come into his own because the guy's badass.
Right, and they beat him up or something?
They beat him up. Then the mafia beat him up because they owned the record label. So they wanted him to be Little Jimmy Black Little, some dude who just sang with four black guys.
Right.
They don't want to do that. He wants to do fucking B.B. King type shit, you know, so.
Yeah, three chords. You're probably talking about GCD, huh?
Something. Yeah. EBF, ABD. Something. And he keeps saying, this is it. This is how you write a fucking song, okay? All that other shit don't care. And he goes, here he goes. And he starts playing it. And it was like 20 songs. 20 songs. He just kept going. This is it. This is the way you write a fucking song. I would love to be able to write a fucking song. One song, I would die. I don't even have the heart. I don't even know where they come up with those lyrics. I have no idea where people come up with those lyrics. We were listening to Lynyrd Skynyrd the other day. Whiskey bottle, brand new car, oak tree, you're in my way. who does that? Who does that? Too much coke and too much mo. Look what's going on inside you. Who writes that? Ooh, that smell. Can't you smell that smell? The smell that surrounds you. Who writes that? Who writes that? That's something that you think about, people. Look at this fucking junkie. He's going to kill himself. And sure, yeah, that's what he's writing about, his song, his brother crashing the fucking car. Who comes up with these lyrics? Who sits there and goes, who the fuck sits there? The other day I was in the car. I was brought to so much emotion. I was listening to the white dude. Ba, 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 ba. Ba, 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 ba. He's from Detroit, Michigan. On the long, lonesome highway.
Oh, I know you're talking about. Oh, yeah. Bob Seger.
Bob Seger.
Yeah, yeah.
What was that dude thinking? Listen to that jam.
Oh, yeah, that's road, a hard one.
On the road? Are you fucking kidding me? He had to be writing this on a bus, sitting there going, on the road again. Here
playing
I am.
Playing the star again.
Playing the star again. Are you fucking
kidding me? Turn the page. That's the jam.
Are you fucking kidding me? Who writes that type of shit? That I can never do that.
I'm blown away by the music. Because, like, I speak English. But just that's no, it's English. But yeah. But think about it. Like the to make all those instruments sound like that, it's mind blowing. I tried for one summer to play guitar, but my fingers were just too short and too uncoordinated. I couldn't do it. But it's that like that's the part that I can't. That just blows my mind. Like the especially bass. Recently, you really like guitar. Every time you put a song with like good bass on, I don't know why. I just sit there stoned and thinking about how someone could even. Like, because with words, you can think about putting words together. I can't imagine putting notes together and then putting the guitar with the drums, with the organ, with the whatever they have.
Yeah, but when you put the words together, you got to put notes together too.
And you know what music is? MMA. You put in the band, the fucking, you put in jiu-jitsu, wrestling, everything together. It all comes together at some fucking point, man. It's really crazy how music, an art is an art is an art.
Yeah, well, to me, what's crazy about it is how these sounds and these rhythms and these notes bring emotion from your body and make you want to move your body to them. You know what I mean? And that's a universal thing. I think that blows me away.
I saw this crazy video. It was they had dementia and they couldn't talk. This is an old lady and a nurse sang church hymns and she came out of it and just started singing. Huh. It blew my mind. It's crazy. There's no reason babies should dance. Like, babies don't know what music
is. Exactly. Yeah, but when exactly, you put, right.
Like, does Mercy like any specific songs now? Like,
everything. Since day one, she's been moving and grooving, man. It's amazing. Yeah, you're right. When she was a kid, she loved it. The little legs would go off, and now she dances. I catch her dancing by herself and shit, you know? It is the expression of it. It's I love it. I don't know what I'd do. That's the way you could, instead of throwing me in prison, just go, you can't hear music no more. I would die.
So you did write a music show, an idea, huh, for music?
I tried. It was just not a music show. It was like a concept where I take a musician and we go to a record store and pick an album that made him fucking wanna. Everybody has an album that made you wanna jump out a window. You know, everybody. Everybody has that one or two albums that you go, especially when you talk to a musician. When you talk to a Slash, you go, can I talk to you? What do you like? And he'll tell you albums that influenced him. And you're like, I get it now. I get it. You know, he liked Aerosmith. So what do you think he's going to play? Aerosmith Plus, which is what Guns N' Roses is. Aerosmith on fucking steroids. That's all they were. Aerosmith on steroids. They just blew up Aerosmith. You know, they had that Aerosmith dirty fucking feel to them. So you ask, you know, when we listen to Chris Cornell, I guarantee, and this is without having a conversation with Chris Cornell, not that I know him, I'm just saying, this is without having a conversation about Chris Cornell. If I walk into Chris Cornell and I take him to a record store, one of the top three albums I guarantee he's going to take is something from the Beatles.
Okay,
I hear the Beatles in his music, so I know he's going to take the White Album or the one with Tomorrow Never Comes, that crazy album when they first started fucking around with drugs.
Yeah, there is a lot of Beatles up in there. And you know what else I hear a lot of, and all that stuff from up there was a lot of Black Sabbath.
A lot of Black Sabbath. I guarantee all those, well, especially, again, Kim Thayil. I did see an interview one time where he said that when the first time he heard Children of the Grave, his head almost blew up. And that's what made him turn the chords around. You know, all those guys, all those great guitar players will tell you that they did some to have that sound. You know, we were talking about this. Tony Iommi from Black Sabbath, his fingers got cut off in a sheet metal accident. That's why whenever you see pictures of Tony Iommi, he's always covering his hand. Go ahead, go to Yahoo and go pictures of Tony Iommi. He's always covering his hand because he lost his fingertips.
So it's the right hand or the left hand?
One of those. So for him to play the guitar, he had to put special caps on his fingers so he couldn't get the chords. So he had to turn the chords upside down or put bass chords on his guitar. That's what creates that sound with Black Sabbath. So, see, he only showed, see the picture? He has the pentagram and the whole thing. He has like fingertips.
Right, okay.
In the earlier pictures, see, he would never show his hands. In the early Iommi pictures, he never showed his hands. And that's why his guitar is so fucking different, because he had to turn, he used bass strings instead of regular guitar strings. That's why the guitar is so heavy. This is very interesting. A lot of those guys, Dave Gilmour probably did something. There was somebody else who I just read did something like that. He turned his guitar around, or he did something weird to get that that thing around. I want to ask you something that I mean to ask you. You went to college?
Never. Didn't finish no college.
No finish. And all your experience with the body is through just martial arts over the years?
Yeah, martial arts.
Over 20 years experience?
Yes, yeah. Done a lot of martial arts.
And you started here in L.A.?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I started doing martial arts with Frank Trejo. We did some kickboxing. So when I was a kid, I did some karate and some boxing. But first time I did anything full contact was I was like in 88. I did started kickboxing.
Now, you were telling me that the school that Enter the Dragon, that's still there? The school in Enter the Dragon where Jim Kelly goes in, the Kempo school, the BTK brothers, what do they call them? They're still there. Was it you that was telling me?
I don't think it was me who was telling you that.
They're still there, you know.
It is, huh?
That school's still there. Like, and it's deep in Englewood.
Oh, okay. Like, oh, so it's a BKF school or
it's
something?
It's a Kempo school.
Yeah, like, yeah, like probably a BKF school.
They call them something. And it's down there in Englewood. Somebody was telling me this story recently.
I bet it is, yeah. Because did he say it was a BKF school, Black Karate Federation? Because they had Kempo schools.
I don't know, but it's all black. Mm-hmm, yeah, I do probably. Know in Englewood. I mean, you know, there's no Mexicans in there. This is an all-black school, but that's still there. I was just wondering if you knew those guys earlier. Now, you knew my friends, the Earl White and his brother. You know Earl White, another guy that teaches Kempo. He teaches Juan Hop Kuen Do down in Hollywood. You know those guys. Okay.
No, so I went through with Frank Trejo. I did know some of the BKF guys. I trained with some of those guys, and that's how I started getting into martial arts on full contact was through him. But a lot of the BKF guys came out there and trained with us, like Ray Rizzard, Ray Dawes, who else? A lot of the guys who's trained with Steve Muhammad, who was the one who was the main guy from there, who was Steve Sanders back then. He called himself Steve Muhammad now.
What's a BKF? Like, what is it from? The Black Karate Federation?
It was the organization. It was a lot of martial arts who were all black guys. And it was a federation.
Did they fight against each other, or they just were like a group?
It was just a group, and they did really well in a lot of the tournaments. They did. I mean, they were successful.
That's interesting. So, where did that come from? Were they not allowed to do karate before? I just think that it was
not allowed, but I think that, you know, back in that time, if black people did something, you usually had to get together with other black people to do it, you know?
You know, the martial arts scene really exploded during the Bruce Lee years. And I had two karate teachers, and both of them were Vietnam vets. It was kind of weird. Like, both of them came back from Vietnam and started teaching karate or some form of martial arts or style, you know? And when I first joined karate, it was a black teacher. It was Rashawn's father, Eddie's student. And it was Goju Karate. It was a black fucking gi. And in those days, 70% of the school was black. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a couple of white dudes and me and maybe another Spanish kid or something like that. But it was all black. And it's weird. Like, right now, here in town, they have Disciples of Moses Powell.
Okay, yeah.
He's a big judo brother, big fucking heavy set black dude from the city that developed his own style of judo. He was supposedly a fucking savage or something.
Yeah, Moses Powell. Yeah, he's a beast.
So he has these students out here now. One of them is a black dude, and one of them is Vinny Cesare. And Vinny, I know Vinny from the Comedy Store and whatnot. Vinny had a school right down the corner, right on Burbank Boulevard on the other side of Lancaster. And Vinny had a school for about 2 years. But he got busy with movies. He had to close it. And it's not that it's a black federation. It was just schools that are from Harlem.
Yeah.
They just, you know, they were from not low rent areas. You know, fucking
lower income. Some of the guys that were that, you know, used to train and do a lot of stuff with the BKF. I mean, one of the guys who managed a lot of those teams, you know, they weren't all black guys. But yeah, it was just it was a group of martial arts. Just a group. Yeah. But I think, but at the same time, I mean, you said you were born in Cuba. Yeah, but how old are you?
53.
So if you were born in the States, when you were born, so our country has changed a lot, because when you were born, if you were born in the States, you black people who were born at your age had different laws governing than white people.
At that time.
At that time, if you were born. 1970. Like at your age. Well, no, not 70, but no. If you're 53, so I'm 46. I was born in 70.
Okay.
So I have sisters who are 6 and 8 years older than me. When they were born with different laws than I was born.
In which way?
And what black people could do and what white people could do.
Unwritten.
No, written laws.
Written laws.
And yeah, and then unwritten. So I lived in unwritten laws. So yeah, if you're doing stuff like, yeah, but like, that's, our country has changed a lot, and people don't realize how long ago, that it wasn't really that long ago, you know, that, you know, my sisters who were, you know, just a little bit older than me were born with different laws.
Do you ever think, like,
64 is when it changed, right? That's when they moved some of those laws on, yeah.
Do you ever wonder, like, what we're going to look back on and think about how backwards we were? Like, we look now back on civil rights and like, well, that was crazy, that there were different laws. And I don't know what it is. Maybe it's gay marriage, or I don't even know what's even after that that's going to be the next thing that just...
You never know. I mean, there's things that I think that I think about, I think are just bizarre that they have them as laws, but you never know what is going to change, or what are the things that we do, you know? Like, okay, I grew up smoking. And we grew up where you could smoke everywhere. But now that we've lived without it,
it would be amazing. Oh, I see what you're saying. No. Yeah. Oh, laws. Yes, yes. I thought you meant unwritten laws for black people. Like, when I was growing up, what's an unwritten law for if you saw, like, a black people at the pool? What the fuck is going on here? You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah. Yeah, but I'm talking about written laws. Those were written laws. In 64, I believe the laws changed in 64. Like, you couldn't go here, you couldn't go there.
Like, you know, segregation. It's funny that, like, yeah. I thought you meant like what black people don't do and can't do. Like, you won't see a lot of black people skiing. You won't see black people playing hockey. I thought that's what you meant. You know, I remember going to Florida when I was a kid. And, you know, my uncle
I try to break as many of those rules as I can.
Yeah, you have to break those rules.
You know, I try to get on my white boy as often as possible. Get my white boy on.
My uncle was a Cuban dude. He wasn't racist at all, nothing. I remember him going to me, hey, we didn't, they don't let me say la playa. Because in Miami in those days, you know, it's 100 degrees. You wouldn't see one brother at the beach. And one day we're at the beach and we saw three brothers, but they were in the shade. I mean, I was like 7. My uncle goes, look, three brothers in the beach. It's fucked up because they usually don't go to the beach when it's hot like this. I thought that's what you meant by unwritten laws.
No, I said laws. You put in unwritten.
Unwritten, okay. Laws that I didn't know about. Abso-fucking-lutely. Absolutely. Absolutely. I still remember... I still remember walking with this young kid to go get James Brown records when Hot Pants came out.
Mm-hmm.
My best friend, Jasper Williams, and me, we gave like 50 cents and we went to get the single. It was 50 cents, you know. I don't know if it was racism. Like, we had to walk from 127th Street to like 116th Street in Broadway. Like, we were young to do that, you know. Mm-hmm. That was unwritten.
Yeah, 11 blocks.
That's unwritten. Yeah. Like, you can't do that. And I remember a beat cop stopping us on the way back. And I always thought about if that was, like, years later, I always thought about if that was racism. Like, me walking with this black kid and the white cop stopped us and didn't take our money or nothing. We were fucking 6.
Mm-hmm.
He just wanted to know what we were doing, what was in the bags.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I never thought about that. Till 30 years later. 30 years later, I think, was that a racist thing? Never thought about it at that age. You know, it's so weird when you're young, you don't even know what race is. You didn't know. Jasper was my friend. I didn't know if he was black. I didn't even look at that. That didn't even fucking matter to me. Years later was when I realized it. Holy shit, that's how come I know all about this music? Because of Jasper. That's why I know about MFSB and all that early stuff. Because of Jasper and Joe Tex and and Aretha Franklin fucking, you know. But it was, I don't know, I didn't know nothing. I didn't care. I came from a society. My mom kept somebody, but I thought years later that the reason me and him got shaken down that day was because he was black. Then maybe. Yeah,
you never know. I mean, we have an amazing country. I love here, and we have a lot of diversity, a lot of cool things to see. I was just in Dallas over the weekend. I got to go to, I was in Fort Worth, so I went to some country bars and listened to some country music. It was cool, you know. I haven't got an album. I haven't bought the guy's his CD. He's doing some songwriting, man. But yeah, you know, at the end of the day, like, man, those stuff like that doesn't happen as much anymore. It's been years since I got DWB, except for a few months ago.
What's DWB?
Driving While Black.
Where'd you get DWB there?
Oh, man, the other I was in San Francisco, and my friend of mine was driving, and the police pulled us over. And he said, well, something came back with your plates that said, you know, Alabama. He said, well, I live on Alabama Street. That's why it says it on my plate. And he says, okay, well, we just thought, you know, the plate is funny. When we saw you pull over, we thought you guys were going to run because it was a stolen car, because the guy had a BMW. And I said, well, why'd you run the plates to begin with? And the plates were fine. He didn't have an answer. We just said, hey, it's okay. Well, as soon as you finish, just let us go. And that was a bummer of an experience. But, you know, yeah, it happens. Because he didn't give him a ticket. There was no law broken. He just ran the plate and then saw him pull over and thought, oh, they're going to break for it.
Yeah, the country's changed a lot, man. But not really, but really.
Yeah.
Not really, but really.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's weird,
you
huh?
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Not really, but really. That's when you said Dallas. I thought you were going to come up with a story, you know. Yeah. Texas is always a whiz of a story when it comes to that kind of stuff and behavior. But everywhere is. You don't
hey, know but what, the bottom line is I was hey, I was doing my thing. I had fun. I enjoyed myself down there in Dallas. And so I would think that the country has changed quite a bit.
Do you think
compared to what other generations went through.
Do you think they've really changed, or they've just stopped saying it out loud?
Nah, I think that people generally have changed. I think that our country, I think that right now is a time where we have this thing where all this stuff's happening on the internet. But until that was happening, I felt that our country was a lot less racist than it was in the past. I've got to go and travel a lot throughout the South. I'm from California. I got to travel through this sport. I've been blessed with being able to travel to all these crazy places throughout the world, but even through places in the States that I would never go to. You know what I mean? So like Evansville, Indiana, or Jasper, Alabama. And I've had great experiences in a lot of these places that I would have never thought was possible if I based it on what I was taught about, you know, some parts of this country.
Now, let me ask you this. When you were at this country club last week, this country music club, country club, were there some other brothers in there?
No, I was the only one.
You were the only one.
I was the only one.
You know, it's just, I live in a 50-50 type thing. Like I said to you, things have changed, but not really. I still feel it, not towards me. I'm just saying that. I feel it at times, like, and I'm not even black, and I feel and see different things, and I just, it's not that I turn my face away, it's that I just, what are you going to do? What can you do? It's something that you could jump up and down about for weeks, and nobody, either you get it or you don't. You know, sometimes it's taught at home when you're a child, sometimes you bump into two or three of your fucking idiot friends when you're 13, and it influences you at an early age, but besides that, you know, it's just something that in my world, like the way I see it, the way I see things, and I, you know.
Yeah, I think you just got to do your part, right?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. That's what I figured was my part. Like, I could go to Fort Worth and go and experience a place that's just like what I do in L.A., but I would miss an opportunity to see, like, a whole part that's going on in this country. And I felt like I was in another country in this place in Fort Worth. So I was like, man, that was a cool experience.
It's funny how what society perceives, you know, they want, like, I think sometimes, and we've all heard that expression where, like, Julius Erving, for example, like, you know, when I was a kid, to me, Julius Erving was everything. As soon as I saw Julius, I was hooked. I liked everything about him, his interviews, whatever, you know, and it's weird how I had other friends in Jersey that they would say things, but they liked Julius.
Right.
They liked Julius because he was Julius. they would say other shit like we had to play fucking Patterson Eastside, or we had to play fucking one of the scariest things I ever saw in my life was when I had to play Biddy Basketball in Neptune, New Jersey. I was never scared of black people till then, dog. That was real. That is real.
I don't know about Neptune.
Oh, yeah. Neptune, that, right? That shit is deep, you know. Camden, them brothers, you know, and I think about places like Camden, like deep, deep. The only problem ever, and I'm telling you this, people, 53 years old, I did time in prison, and the only fucking bad experience I've ever had with an African-American was in Camden, New Jersey. Camden, New Jersey. They don't play. They just don't like fucking whitey. They don't care if he's Cuban, Arab. They just don't like whitey. You read about over the years how the police force quit there. That's a different fucking
police type. Force quit.
A couple years ago, there was so much fucking crime in Camden, New Jersey. Since I was a kid. Since I was a kid. That's the only place I've been beat. Like, they took my fucking money. Like, they took it. Like, they didn't give a fuck. That's the only place where I saw a guy in a wheelchair. And the basketball player's name was Dennis Still. I'll never forget this. From Camden, New Jersey. Ended up going to like fucking Notre Dame or something. But in the final game, North Bergen beat Camden when we were in grammar school. And Dennis Still spitting that guy in the wheelchair's face. You know, he was just a crazy black dude. That's it. You know, but that's the only bad, like fucking craziness experience. And I've been in some fucking dark places, dog. I did drugs for years. I did fucking time, you know. So, I don't even know what my point was. I got to stop smoking weed here. But it's weird what people perceive. People see, who were we talking about before? On fucking Terrence Howard.
Oh, yeah. Right, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And they think that's the way, you know, people really don't know and they don't want to know. A lot of people don't know. I went to Paducah, Kentucky a couple of weeks ago. I was in a restaurant. And I heard people fucking saying things about Arabs, like out loud.
Just at like a dinner conversation?
Like
out loud.
Yeah. Like some lady said to me, where are you guys flying in from, L.A.? And then they started talking amongst themselves in the table next to us about, I don't know how people get on planes with all them Arab terrorists and shit like that. Them motherfucking tow heads, I mean, they were going off, Jack. So, you know, I see it. I still hear it. I still, you know what I'm saying? I still fucking feel it from times. Hey, and I'm, like I've said 1,000 times, I'm racially insensitive from time to time. I say some fucked up shit.
Well, it's also because there's a difference. There's a difference between, I think there's, you know, there are some things that, and there's stereotypes, and some of them are funny, and some of them are fun to be along with. But are you going to judge what opportunities you would put for someone or how you'd interact on it based on it. Yeah, you know, some of my friends might make fun of me for different things like that. But that's just, I think, there's a difference between fun and then making some policy on it, you know?
Has no one ever accused you, Dean, of being racist in, like, a fight decision?
I get accused of everything in a fight decision. So I can get accused of, I've been accused of everything, yeah.
What's the weirdest one? Like, what's, like, one that just... When you saw it, you're like, what are they talking about?
I don't really remember a lot of them because most of them don't come from anybody that I take an opinion of. Like, because when you say accusations, I'm thinking like maybe internet or something like that. And yeah, I get accused of, I get accused of all kinds of strange things. And people come up with conspiracy theories that they know to be fact is what they believe in. Yeah. So I can't remember one off the bat, you know, right off the top.
I hate bringing this up again, Lee. I know you're going to get mad at me. You watch People versus O.J. Simpson?
Nah, okay, so I don't watch TV.
Well, you better start fucking watching.
Yeah, I got to start watching TV. I'm missing out on some good shit, huh?
Yeah.
TV versus O.J. Simpson. And what else? What's the other one? What's that other one? Oh, Vinyl.
Vinyl.
Yeah, okay, yeah, Vinyl. So TJ versus, dude, I heard it's good, man.
Well, the thing about it showed me something I didn't know. On paper, OJ was fucking guilty. On paper, you got to be an idiot if you don't think he's fucking guilty. They did a great job defending him. But in the defense, they did expose something. They did expose the racism in LAPD. But at the end, it's really funny. At the, you know, how they did it was they fucking got the jury downtown and they got more of a black jury. With OJ, and the speeches were great last night. But it was funny, at the end, OJ's sitting there, and he looks up, And as fucking the last juror walks out, he turns around and he gives him a black power fucking sign. He walks out. And today they said that in real life, that juror was a black power guy. Mm.
No, wait, didn't you grow up here?
He grew up here. That's why. Uh-huh. What were you thinking during all that? I want to know.
I was thinking during all that, man. I guess, you know.
Okay, the day of the verdict, it was really that bad out here?
Okay.
The day of the verdict, like nobody was at work.
No, yeah. Nobody was at work. The people were watching. I tell you, well, I remember because you could listen to it on the radio.
You were 27 years old, right? Something like that. 26, 20 years ago. Something like that.
Maybe 26, 25, 26. Yeah. I think.
So wait, what do you mean? So people maybe just tell their boss, like, I can't come in, it's OJ?
People were in bars watching it.
People were in fucking bars. Mm-hmm. Oprah had it live. It was on fucking Times Square. Like, people were stopped for the verdict. Like, that was it. Like, they fucking, the media turned this into something.
Yeah.
You know, I forgot all
that. I remember I was listening to it. It was a weird thing. It was a weird thing. It was a weird thing because I think that, like, it was cool to see the LAPD exposed. So, you know, because hopefully that something was going to be that, since it was different than the way things normally go, it was cool to see the LAPD exposed and know that maybe they were going to clean it up. And I think they did. I think it did. There was some good done behind that, you know. Say, hey, you know, anything that goes there, it's corrupt. You can't take anything out of there, you know.
Well, they threw Mark Furman out, you know, but Mark Furman, I mean, there's still allegations of shit with LAPD till this day. I see some fucked up shit. You know, Lee's been in the car with me when I yell and scream at him. Because they do some fucked up shit, LAPD.
Well, I have to say that the police experience around LA area has gotten a lot better than it was when I was growing up here in LA. So something definitely has changed. So the way they police, yeah. Like growing up around here, police were, I mean, it was, I mean, police were, yeah.
And all these suburbs?
Everywhere. Down LA, Pasadena, out there, everywhere. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, when you see the police pull you over, you do not know what kind of experience you're going to have. Yeah.
It's that scary.
It was. And it's not like, I don't believe it's like that anymore.
I've been pulled over 3 times. And the cop that gave me the ticket was a black cop on a motorcycle. Every right to give me a ticket. I was talking on my phone. I was not disrespectful to him. And he was not disrespectful to me. The other two cops were not disrespectful at all to me. They were white. Mm-hmm. You know, they let me go on a warning. You know, it was on one of the highways. And I know on Fridays and Saturday nights, if you speed on the highways in L.A. and don't drink, they just let you go with a warning if you're legit, because they don't have time to sit there with the fucking ticket. Mm-hmm. So if they look at you and you're not drunk,
if you're not drunk, yeah,
they're like, doing 10 over the speed limit, they'll ask you, you tell them the truth, tell them you're sorry, they'll let you go. And 2 times I didn't have my license on me. They let me go with no nothing. How's that one for you? Because for years I drove without my license.
Why?
Because I didn't have one. I lost on a plane, and it was a Colorado license, so I was scared to get my California license. So for 2 or 3 years, I didn't. Maybe 4 or 5 years, I didn't have a license.
How did you get on planes?
An ID, a Colorado ID. Jeez. Who do you think you're dealing with? Some fucking novice here? You think you just, you know, you think I just fell off the fucking raft?
It's. I've only been pulled over a few times, but one time. It was like the first time I ever got pulled over. They came around the side, like it was two cops in a car, and they had the flashlights. And I just, it was like right when I got my license, and I forgot to turn my lights on as I was leaving a convenience store. But whenever I hear anyone talk about not knowing what kind of experience you're going to have with a cop.
It scares the shit out of me, too.
It scares the shit out of me. But then it doesn't compute. I just don't understand. It just doesn't make sense to me, because I was lucky enough to never really have to deal with them judging, or I don't know, I don't even know what the word would be, but that's crazy.
Well, I think that between the OJ and the Rodney King thing and a few other things, I think that they had to come in and clean it up, I think, you know? They had to change what they were doing. And I'm glad they did. It's a lot better. Yeah.
That case is, because, Joe, you always make comparisons to MMA for comedy and everything. That trial, I haven't watched like the last 3 episodes, but that trial reminded me of MMA, because the beginning of it, all they're talking about, all the prosecution is talking about, is how much of a slam dunk the case is, how they got him, how they're going to destroy him. And then just little by little,
just
OJ's lawyers are chipping away at it. And then I got up right to the point where they did the glove. And it almost looked like with like Ronda Rousey getting kicked, Conor McGregor, whatever, any upset like that, it just seemed like, oh, they were just not prepared at all for a harder worker. I knew he got off, but I didn't know the intricacies of the case until I started watching the show.
The part I wish I could have been there to see was, remember, do they do this in the show? Where didn't one of the guys from the prosecution have heart problems in like back in Judge Ito's chamber?
Yes.
When they doubled, he was back there with the two guys. Yes, I guess it seemed like they were, I mean,
he had a heart attack.
Like,
heart attack in the beginning. They lost him and Chris Darden replaced him.
Right. Now, how did it go down? Was it depicted like these guys are hammering with so many questions and he's just got stressed out?
They cracked that dude. Mm. They cracked him. They just, you know, he was a white dude. He was out of his league. And he ran up against the Yankees. You know, all that you learned from the OJ thing now compared to 20 years ago that I saw in full effect now was you can't have four fucking Ronda Rouseys. They're going to beat anybody. You know what I'm saying? That's what they went and got.
You got the All-Star team.
They had the All-Star team. They got Barry Sheck, the other dude, Gar, whatever his name was, and the other white dude that's crazy, the black dude that's crazy.
Yeah, Johnny Cochran.
Johnny Cochran.
They had, the Kardashian.
Right? Kardashian, but he's a dead mute. You know, he was worthless, so you had him. But the geniuses in that were Alan Dershowitz was Alan Dershowitz was the game plan. But
who did Nathan Lane play?
That was the Marine. He's the Sammy the Bull's attorney for a while. He was crazy. That guy's a muscler. That guy's a bully. That guy was the one that they don't. He's the one that asked Mark Fermany if he said the word nigger. And he goes off in court. Have you ever said the word niggas? How many times have you said the word niggas?
It's like 10 questions. It's like,
oh my God.
So have you ever said it? When did you say it? Are you calling these people a liar? Have you ever said it? Would you ever say it? And then he just
just tormented them. So they couldn't. That first white dude couldn't take it. These guys were coming in for, they were coming in for the kill. That Barry Sheck guy became a fucking savage. You know, he was a DNA savage. They swayed the jury. They pushed him into a different direction, but it was too late. They pushed Mark Fuhrman so deep into it. And even last night, he goes, in the fall of 1985, something began. It began when they went up to the steps and he was beaten. And all of a sudden, Johnny Cochran said, you know what began 1985? The first time Mark Fuhrman was called to Rockingham. And he saw a white woman running and he saw her black husband. And if you read his memoirs, he says he pulled couples over all the time. So he found the two gloves. He just painted the path of them. You had 8 or 9 black jurors. They were, OJ's a hero in the black community.
Yeah,
bro, let me tell you something. Here's the thing about OJ that you don't understand, Lee, that he was a hero in my world.
He was a movie star.
Like nobody wanted to believe it.
Yeah, everybody loved OJ.
And they show that last night, even as he's shaving. The cop coming up to him in the jail and going, so today's the big day. He goes, listen, I got a friend over at the hotel. You have nothing to worry about. He was a white dude. And he goes, listen, if I don't get to see you anymore, can you sign this football for my son? I mean, that's what, you know, everybody loved OJ Lee. He played football, but everybody loved him. He said the right things.
He had all those commercials. Right smile.
He had everything. He had everything going. No. And, you know, I'm a criminal. So I had heard before that he had beat her, never registered, didn't care, had nothing to do with my situation at the time, didn't even judge it. I wasn't there. I know that sometimes when couples argue, shit can get heated. I didn't know that he was beating her on a regular.
And it's also a big step to go from beating to murdering.
The cops got called over there like 50 fucking times. So this is the cops' fault from day one. If they would have arrested him, see, 30 years ago, Lee, if you and Paula got into an argument and she threw a bottle at you and you grabbed her arm and said, Paula, get a hold of yourself. And the neighbor called the cop. The cops would come over. One would take you to a room and one would take Paula to a room. Paula would say you didn't hit her, that she lost her mind through a glass at the wall. And that she you didn't hit her, you just held her hand. The cops would talk and they come to you and go, can you do us a favor? Can you just go for a walk for an hour?
Just get out of the house?
Just get out of the house. Can you go to a hotel for the night? There's nothing happened here. This was a misunderstanding against two couples. Lee got home late. A lot of stress is on the wife. She threw a glass, but the neighbor heard it. You didn't go to jail. Today, you go to jail, Lee.
Yeah, that's
somebody has to go to jail.
Yeah, that's what they say on cops.
Because it has to, because that's what happened after OJ. I got arrested for domestic violence. And nothing, I didn't beat that woman. You know me. Why would I be? It was domestic violence because me and her boyfriend fought. And while we were fighting, she tried to break us up. And I pushed her away. And that's still domestic violence. And it just tripled after that.
Huh.
But when the cops came, they took her and I in the room. And she didn't know. She goes, did you get hurt? And he goes, well, when I was rushing them, I got pushed away. Who pushed you? I don't know. It could have been Joey or the other guy. We both got arrested. Because there was something involved. And that all happened because of OJ.
Really? So you think the entire legal system was changed after that? Wow.
Because they had to deter it.
Yeah.
You have to deter it. If it's a rotten relationship, let's put somebody in jail and let's make you fucking really think about this. Is this what you want with your life? Is this piece of ass worth this fucking jail? But now you're on paper. So once you get in trouble with a girl with domestic violence, even if it's something that simple, you're done. You might as well break up with her because it escalates. And you're going to keep going to jail and keep getting arrested. And that's what happened to me. It escalates. It keeps escalating. There's certain people that don't belong together. And sometimes...
When it gets physical, you got to...
Once it gets physical, you can't. You got to go. That's it. Because it's only going to get worse. That was one time. They're going to promise you it's never going to happen again. It only gets worse. Mm-hmm. And if you see it coming, like if you see it...
Yeah, because you're playing with your life.
Yeah. So that's what happened. So before OJ, you wouldn't go to jail. If you didn't punch her in the fucking mouth and hit her in the stomach with a kick, you're not going to go to jail. If you just argue with her and she pushed you and you pushed her and you took the phone out of her hand or you took the luggage out of her hand, you're not going to jail. You know what I'm saying? Now, you go to fucking jail.
That's terrifying. It's like OJ must relive the entire thing every day. There's no way that a day goes by when he doesn't think about not killing or whatever he did to them, the trial.
I figure it this way. I'm a criminal. I know what it is to do things to people and to feel bad, even if it's the simplest fucking thing. Even if it was just taking $50 from them. I know exactly how bad it feels, but I also know how it feels when you get away with something.
Is it good or bad?
It's a good feeling, but unless you're a fucking idiot, you know you're going to pay for this. So your life becomes something else. Now they show him getting acquitted last night, and he goes home. And in the van, he's like, baby, you know, he thinks it's a year early. When he gets out of jail, OJ, they only showed 10 minutes of that last night, but it was very interesting because it was like that kid that goes away after high school to college and comes home for Thanksgiving, back to the bar where they used to hang out at, and he thinks that everybody's still there partying and shit. So when he gets out of the van, he's like, I'm back in, where did he live? Brentwood?
Brentwood, yeah.
He's like, the mayor of Brentwood is back. He goes, this was the case of the century. Tonight's the party of the motherfucking century. And all of a sudden he looks up and there's 1,000 people with signs. Murderer. And that's when he starts to get it. And then he goes back to his home and there's 1 million people there with signs. You fucking murderer. You know. Then he goes into his home and his family's there. And I'll tell you, I know exactly what it feels like to get out of jail. You feel like you're in the fucking twilight zone.
Like time stood still, but it didn't? Like it stood still in your head?
Yeah, and he goes in the shower and he comes out. And in this show last night, which was really good, that's when he realized what he had done. When he came out of the shower and sat down was where he broke down. And his son comes in or whatever. Then he goes to his party. Another thing he didn't know, the party that he threw...
Mm-hmm.
Was he got $400,000 from Star Magazine to take pictures at the party. So that's when at the party.
$400,000?
To take pictures live at the party.
Wow.
So this is when he was toasting, they made him say a toast. And that's when Rob Kardashian realized he didn't want to talk to this guy no more. And he goes out to see Rob Kardashian. But before that, something happens. He goes to his son. He goes, make a reservation for the Riviera restaurant. Book it for 10 people. Better yet, 15. The more, the merrier. And his son comes back and he goes, Dad, the Riviera said no. And he goes, why not? Did you talk to David? Dave, tell David it's for me. He goes, I did talk to David. And he said, they don't want your kind in there. So when he got out of jail, he thought he had a victory. And he even says to his buddy, where's Marty? Where's Joey? Where's Tommy? And the guy makes up excuses for all of them. So he might have won, but he fucking lost. You know, and shortly after that, he moved to Florida and he continued. Then he moved to Vegas and he got involved with that. So karma nabbed him. I mean, he got away with a double murder. This wasn't a drug dealer's fucking coke stash or a box of gum. You got away. You threw out two double murders into the fucking universe. What do you think's going to happen?
How long did it take for all of that media stuff to die down? So the case ended. Was it months? Was it weeks?
Another year.
Because a whole other year?
Because now they interviewed the jury to find out what had happened, why they made the decisions, all the little stories.
Did you ever get sick of watching it on TV?
At the time, I had read about it, and I was trying to be a comic, though. I was living in a fucking office on top of a Mexican bar in Seattle, paying $100 shitting out a window because they didn't have a bathroom in the building. You know, I wasn't worried about the OJ trial at the time as much as this was a show I just started watching because I thought it was an interesting topic and I wanted to see how they would shoot it. And it really...
Oh, no, it's into... Well, then maybe for you...
For me, I don't think I spent that much time watching it. You know, but the thing about it, it was one of those things that was hard to escape. It's one of those things that's on everywhere. You know what I mean? It was on the radio. So, you know, you kept abreast of it, but... I didn't spend a lot of time watching it. I didn't sit down and watch it.
And you could see at the end, that was something that I had forgotten, that at the end they showed the people hearing the
verdict.
And they showed all, they split screened it. And they showed all, at the time, the real time, they took the real footage.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And you could see people like going, you know, and all of a sudden, not guilty. When he said not guilty, all the black people jumped up. And white people sat there like, you know, and they showed packs of black people. They showed they showed crowds that were mixed.
That's the news were doing
and
it.
Black people jumping up and down. And then they showed white audiences by themselves and them like holding their heads like fucking white women crying and shit. And then they showed packs of black people fucking like going crazy. Like when Biggie died, the riot they caused in Brooklyn when they played the limo, when they played his music and shit. It was like that. Like, so sometimes you win, but you fucking lose. You know, Johnny Cochran died of fucking cancer after that. The other guy died of brain fucking tumors, Johnny Cochran. The other guy, Kardashian, died of cancer. You know, I mean, it was a big fucking scam. You pay for your sins. You know, it was a fucking mild, it was a wild experience for those people. The jurors, they were sequestered for a year.
A year?
Yeah, a year.
And you can't work? That's, I don't think, has there been a trial like that since? I don't think so.
A fucking year? When he was walking around after, and that's how it ends. It ends with him looking at his trophy. With him looking at a statue, him, his bronze statue in his living room, in his yard. He walks out, but I related to the part of getting out of prison. And when I got out of prison, I had no reservations. I knew exactly what I was walking out to. I knew I was going to walk out to indifference, and people who were my friends weren't going to be my friends. I knew this going in. I knew people who were mildly friends of mine were not going to talk to me now. The people that were friends with the drug dealer definitely didn't fucking talk to me. Like, I had people say, I'm friends with Byers, the guy you robbed or whatever, and they wouldn't talk to me. So there's always a problem when you get out of prison. So, but I did my time. I had nothing to worry about. You know what I'm saying? He got away with fucking murder. He had a lot to worry about. Look, it caught him 3 or 4 years later. Why? How long did it take him to go back to prison? A couple fucking years he was out, maybe 5 years.
People were after him. I think he got set up, right? I think some guys asked him to go get, they told him, yeah, you got some of your stuff over here, we're going to go get it back with you. But I think they were recording him while their things were going on. So they're like, okay, they were like his accomplices, but they're actually recording him to turn him in. So I think everybody was kind of gunning for him. That's what I heard, at least. Yeah.
I saw an interesting thing today. I saw, and this is what my wife said. Mm-hmm. My wife said the same thing. She saw the John Jones thing. And she said right off the bat, he got profiled. And he got pulled over. She goes, trust me, my wife is white. And my wife is a Gentile. She knows nothing about the criminal line. And my argument was, Lee, what was my argument with you, Lee? What the fuck was he doing now? Okay, that's the bottom line. 11:49 at night. You're married. You got two kids. What the fuck are you doing out when you're on fucking probation? You know what I'm saying? With a fucking $2,000 car. You follow me? You're on probation.
A $2,000 car?
A $200,000 car.
A $200,000.
Whatever the fuck he was driving. Uh-huh. Revving high. Whatever the fuck he's doing. You follow me?
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
I think 5 out of 10 cops will pull you over at 11:49 if you're revving. Because as I found out a week later, when you rev your engine at a light, that's drag racing.
Yeah, I didn't know.
I didn't know that either. So today, he said that he was being profiled. And then a couple days later, that cop has been reprimanded for black profiling before. But let's get to the bottom of this. Why did this all happen? Because he was out of the house at 10 to 12. And you're on probation.
Is he on a curfew?
No, but when you're on probation, you're on an intelligence curfew because you know that anything could happen. Mm-hmm. OJ got set up, but he knew exactly what he was going to do when he went.
Yeah, no, he knew what he was going to do.
And I love OJ. I tell you right out from the heart.
And no, I'm just agreeing with the fact that everybody's kind of was gunning for him.
Life was setting him up.
Yeah, yeah.
What he didn't know, OJ, was life was setting him up. Life gave him a big pass. All he had to do was move to Florida, date black women. You follow me now? Date black women. Keep your mouth shut. Don't let nobody take pictures of you. And he would have gone away. And eventually something would have happened to him. He would have lost a leg in a crocodile accident playing golf. He would have walked back to Putna. And then that's something would have happened to him. He didn't. He stayed the juice.
Everywhere he went, I think people were
he did cocaine. He stayed the juice. That drama followed him. He didn't have that drama before he killed Nicole. He had pussy drama before he killed Nicole. But he didn't have that karma drama. He dated some chicks. She accused him of doing blow. He started doing tons of blow in Miami. He got the 33. It didn't stop. You know, it followed him. But it's not like today I was thinking about something before I got in the shower to come down here. I said, I had a good day today. I did some good things today. And I started thinking about how sometimes you have a bad day and you have a good day. But you control that good day. You know you can control your good days. Listen, if you get in your car and it blows up, there's nothing you can do. There's nothing you can do, dog. It's not your fucking fault. If you get in your car right now and the battery's dead and you got a meeting at 4:30, that's not your fault. That shit happens. You know, that's why you drive a newer car. You get tune-ups. You know, if you don't pay that ticket on your car for $28, after 3 months, they're going to tow your motherfucking car. They're going to tow your motherfucking car. So you're going to go out there right now, and your car's going to be towed. And you're going to want to blame being here, being with Joey Diaz. No. You didn't pay your fucking ticket from the beginning. You knew you got to pay the ticket. They'll give you a fucking warrant here. You get pulled over for a speeding ticket. You don't pay the ticket. You say you're going to go to court. You fail to appear. You get pulled over, you're going to go to jail. You can't blame it on fucking Lee Syatt or your wife didn't mail the ticket. But that's what we always blame something. You know what I'm saying? We always blame something. I love John Jones. Love John Jones. I'm one of his biggest fucking fans, man. I love John. And he's 20 fucking six. You know what 20s mean? That you could fuck up. That's what 20s mean. For me, I did time. I went for jail or kidnapping. I didn't know what I got involved in. For him, he went out, had a couple drinks, snorted blow, hit some lady, got scared, and ran away. That's the shit you do when you're fucking scared and there's drugs around. It's mistakes. It's called mistakes. You can't judge a person for making mistakes. But don't blame everything on, you know, he was out of 10 to 11.
Yeah. Well, the last one, this last incident, I mean, I don't know any of this. I don't really worry about him. I try to not focus on that type of stuff. But the last one, I wasn't there. You know, it's like, I wonder how that happened. You know, I wasn't there.
None of us were there.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, dog, in 36 arrests, and I look in your face and tell you, I never spoke to a cop that way. And John Jones has three brothers, and they've all been gentlemen every time I've met them.
Mm-hmm.
I know they're tight with the mom. And I know he wouldn't talk like that way. He wouldn't have called him a pig if the guy wasn't accusing him of something. Mm-hmm. The other excuse I have for John is maybe when I got arrested and I turned myself in, they told me kidnap. And I go, what the fuck are you talking about, kidnap? I didn't kidnap. I didn't call nobody. There was no ransom note. I didn't know the particulars about kidnapping. John Jones didn't know the particulars about drag racing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He didn't know that racing your engine at the light is drag racing. A lot of people don't know that.
I didn't know that.
All now.
But I can see what they're doing. They're like, that's how people start off drag racing.
Seven out of ten cops wouldn't give a Frenchman's fuck. Well, maybe now because there's a lot of drag racing incidents on the five. They closed the five a few weeks ago in the daytime.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So lately. But a $200,000 call when a black man. You ever watch that episode of Sanford and Son? When he gets hit in the back with a white man by the Cadillac, he wouldn't shut the fuck up for a week. Lamont kept saying, but Dad, I'm telling you, I can't move my neck. Uh-huh. I got hit by a white man in a Cadillac. What's Fred Sanford doing? He's racial profiling before there was racial profiling. It was 1975. Mm-hmm. What's his name? Why do I call him Red Fox? Sanford. Sanford was racially profiling. You know, Paul Mooney wrote those episodes. So
Paul Mooney wrote those. Okay,
yeah, Paul Mooney wrote for them. So, you know, fucking a white man in a Cadillac and shit hit me. You know, I hit the jackpot. Same fucking thing. He saw a black man in a $20,000 car at midnight. When he pulled up, he realized it was John Jones. And his camera was on and, you know, let this motherfucker ride. But all that, regardless of what he was doing, anybody else was doing, my argument was, what the fuck were you doing on 10 to 11 in that fucking car, 10 to 12?
Well, I wasn't there. I don't
know. No, none of us were there. No. I'm not saying to lay a fucking opinion. Let me give some shout outs here. We'll talk about this. I was trying to fucking talk to you about it before. I want to thank Louis the Kid for the Animals album and the teddy bear for my daughter. You know I love you with all my heart. I love Doug Duar, Michael Gabbard, Brandy Lynn. You know I love you. Jamie Stanley, JT, Joe Kylie Barnes, Lance Armentrout, Cocksucker, Always Around, and Dominic Salas, another bad motherfucker I love. So, I got to give these people shout outs.
No, you know, I love these motherfuckers. The Animals album.
The Animals album. And he showed up at San Jose and told me, he goes, I got you the album. It's going to take a month to get. This guy's cool as shit. So, he knows I love him with all my heart. So, the reason why I was asking you about college before and working out was because I wanted to know how you came up with this idea. Let's start with recovery first.
Okay.
When we talk about recovery. When I was a kid, I got involved in lifting weights. I went from whatever to whatever. I knew nothing about nothing. I just knew that you did five sets of six, and you ate 180 grams of protein, and you got muscles eventually.
Right.
And you kept doing that shit. And you ran. Nobody told me I had to mix up workouts. Mm-hmm. Nobody told me how to do cables. Nobody told me how to jump on tables. Nobody told me how to, nobody told you nothing. Then you see Sergio Oliva, the black dude, the black Cuban. You ever see him, the bodybuilder? When I was a kid, I saw him in West New York once as a kid. And I went up to him and I go, how do you get so muscular? And he looked at me in Spanish and he goes, steaks like a motherfucker. So, you know, this is it. And all of a sudden, we evolve, and now we have Gatorade, and that's a sports drink that you drink when you're fucking thirsty. And then over the years, you know, I was telling Lee, when you and I came up, you went to a health food store, and for $8.99, you bought a container of protein, an egg and milk protein, and you put it in your milk, and you put Hershey syrup and an egg and wheat germ and whatever else, and you mixed it up and you drank it. And if you did two of those, you got 60 grams of protein a day and you got muscles. But it was $8.99. Now I go to GNC and to buy protein powder, it's $80 with 10% off with the gold card. And, you know, I go to this other place for protein, it's $49.95. And protein is just all this. And at the end of the fucking, it's like a $2 billion business. And all of a sudden, I started trying to lose weight. And mm-hmm. people were saying to me, hey, man, what do you eat an hour after you work out? I didn't know what they were talking about. And then Justin Fortune's like, well, you should eat some tuna with some lettuce because the lettuce will take the acid out of your muscles, whatever's in lettuce. And they say that about marijuana and hash, too.
Hmm.
Hash takes the acid out of your muscles. after you work out.
See, I didn't know that about the lettuce or about the hash.
Yeah, so you hear all these. I'm just saying the different things you hear.
Right.
I'm saying, like what you were talking about, rules, how rules have changed over the years.
Right.
When I was a kid, you went home and you made a milkshake with $8.99 protein powder. It was lasting you for 2 months. It was one fucking scoop. But over the years, you know, recovery, then MMA came along, and then they started scientifically designing different things. And then I went to a health food store one day to buy protein powder, and the guy goes, what do you kind of workout are you doing? And I told him, and he goes, you know, when you do weightlifting, you're doing an anaerobic workout, so little fibers get broken, so you have to rebuild those fibers after you work out. So you should really add something to your thing. So I just used to go home and make a protein shake, you know. But I use this protein shake now as a substitute for a meal, just to get those 30 grams, no banana,
right.
Just straight protein. I keep the carbs low. So now they start telling me about recovery. So I started buying this thing, PM360.
Mm-hmm.
It's watermelon flavored, not fucking bad. I like it. They have it in no other flavors. I just took the watermelon one day, and I like how it tastes. And I did it for a month. You know, because I'm 53 and I want every opportunity. I don't want to feel sore.
Right.
You know, I want to be able to do 5 workouts a week, and you can't. It's when you're my age, sometimes I do 4 and I can feel it. And another friend of mine started saying, you know, you should mix up your recoveries and all this stuff. And all of a sudden, I'm on the phone with you one day.
Okay.
And you tell me about recovery. So just talk to me. Tell me and the people at home.
Well, first of all, I'm like you, man. I even though I've done martial arts for a lot of my life, I didn't really understand a lot about you know, diet or protein or anything. I was always eating horrible. I just, for over the last few years, started to pay a little bit better attention to what I eat and the things that, you know, and I realized a lot of the injuries I would have gotten, I wouldn't have gotten if I had been hydrated, you know. But how this came about is, you know, Savant Young, that's who I train with, Fight Academy. Savant Young, one of his fights, he rehydrated with an IV. This was a few years back. And he ended up getting edema. He got swelling. He started retaining water and needed medical attention. So he was talking to a friend of his, a doctor, and the doctor was telling him, hey, that's not actually the best way to rehydrate. Orally is the best way. And here's some things you should put in there, and you should make sure you have this and you should have that. And then he thought about it. I go, well, here, let me get a friend. And he goes, well, you know, we should make it a product. This is a need for this, because there's nothing really good out there. The best thing out there is Pedialyte. Which is awesome for what it is. It's for, you know, babies. After the baby's been, you know, throwing up and pooping or whatever, you know, the babies get dehydrated and you need something to help them out. But the baby doesn't have a lot on his schedule. He doesn't have to go, you know, fight the next day or, you know, so it's perfect for that. The needs of a depleted athlete, because our athletes in our sport, they cut weight. And that weight cut depletes them of their water. It depletes them of their electrolytes. Also need other micronutrients, other vitamins like magnesium, things like that. Also, one of the main things we've noticed is that the athletes have a hard time holding something down, so they can't get stuff back into their system. Even after they've taken the IV, their enzymes in their stomach are not ready to take in the food and get the most out of that food they're taking in afterwards. So they're getting bloated. That's one of the things in F2 is it has things in it to reactivate the gut and get your digestive tract working again. And so it is going to help you recover after that weight cut, but it also helps you recover after it's great. So recovery is recovery. If you're dehydrated, if you need to get the glycogen back into your muscles, all these things you need, however you got that way, this has it in there for you. So I use F2 when after I work out, especially after I've sweated. I use it after my workouts, and I feel that I get the most out of my workout. I use it to get those gains after that. And also so I'm not wiped out like afterwards, because a lot of times after some of my harder workouts, I'm wiped out for the rest of the day. If I drink the F2, I'm back in the game, and I also get more out of my workout.
Now, when you're talking about workout, is it a weight workout or just a let's say you do a kickboxing workout for an hour and a half. Do you still do F2?
Oh, definitely F2 with something like that when you sweat. So usually, let's say if I do like, because usually I rarely do a weight workout that's without a conditioning component to it. So if I do, so most of my workouts are cardio. Like I'll go for a run, or I'll go do hills, or if I do weights, I'll do weights first and then I'll have a you know, a conditioning part to it that's going to be heavy and it's going to wipe me out. So I'm definitely going to have F2 after that. Or after a grappling workout. Because, you know, when you grapple, how much weight, if you have a nice long session, one of those days where you get in a few rolls, you could sweat out quite a few pounds. You're definitely going to need some F2.
When I sweat out a few pounds, I don't want to put them the fuck back. That's number one. But it's weird when I go over to Alberto's.
But see, that's what's important. When you sweat out some pounds, if you sweat and lose pounds, you need to replete yourself. You need to get the water back into your system, and you need to get, because you're going to feel better. You're going to wipe around. It's nice. You lost the pounds and it feels good, but you're doing your body a disservice. You're going to feel better. And also the main thing is that's how the injuries happen. That's how, you know, you get torn muscles when you're working out and you're dehydrated. That's how you get the muscle tears, especially at the age we are now.
And I forgive me, I don't remember if it was every athletic commission, but I think it was California. Didn't one of them just ban IV?
Okay, yeah. Yes, they did. And I believe that, and the UFC does not use IVs at all anymore. So they have, it's just part of their policy. None of the athletes are allowed to use IVs.
So the reasoning, because I took it, I'm brand new into any sort of supplements or anything like that. And I was, honestly, I was nervous just because sometimes you have something like that and it tastes like chemicals or something weird. It tasted like lemonade to me.
Mm-hmm.
But so when you are going to fighters or anything like that and saying, okay, you should, since you can't use IVs, use this. Is it the whole package? Is it, oh, you're going to get replenished? Because you're only drinking 16 ounces of water. You're not drinking a ton of water.
Well, no, because, well, an athlete, after he cuts weight, he's going to use more than one pack. After my workouts, I use one pack. After you've done a weight cut, you would use it like you would use Pedialyte. And like the athletes usually use a liter to 2 liters. Some of these guys using 2.5, 3 liters. So that time, and each one of these makes half a liter. So they would be using a lot more than you would use your workout. But after a workout, I just use one.
What do you recommend for that package?
For this package?
How much water? 16 ounces?
Yeah, makes it 16 ounces, half a liter.
So now let's say you drink one of those, like I usually do. I walk in the door, I put my bag down, I go right in the kitchen, I put 16 ounces in a water thing, I fill that up, I shake it up, I take the gi out, dry it, the knee pads, the whole thing. I get on jiu-jitsu, whatever, workout, and I write down what I learned, and I write down mat time, what technique I learned. I shoot in the shower. When I get out of the shower, I'm fucking thirsty again. Like, I'm, you know, that was just like an appetizer of water.
Right.
Do I drink another package of that, or do I just drink straight water this time?
I think for you, after your workouts, I think one packet and then some water afterwards. And this is going to make you want to drink some more water, because that's part of what it's supposed to do. It's going to help you absorb water. So, yeah, drink one of these packets and then water. Now, someone who's, and then see how you feel, you know. If you had an extremely exhausting day where you might have, you know, a long day and you were dehydrated, maybe two, but you don't have to do two right away, you know. Now, an athlete, after he's made weight, he's going to do 2 to 6.
What about baseball player? Because when you're watching other sports too, they always have, like, Tom Brady always has this Gatorade bottle, but it's not Gatorade. I don't know what it is. Does it work in game?
Yeah, it's definitely going to work in the game. So like let's say even for a wrestling tournament or a jiu-jitsu tournament, you know, you're going to have matches throughout the day. You're definitely going to take it. If you're playing football, you're going to definitely need to drink something like this at halftime. You know what I mean? So yeah, it definitely works during the game. And yeah, you notice I noticed the difference fast. I feel better right away. Let's say you have a long night out. Definitely drink this in the morning. Maybe drink one before you go to bed.
Let me ask you this. When I work out and I go home and I was making the mistake of drinking a protein shake, what's the difference between me drinking a protein shake? You have protein in yours. Mm-hmm. I read the pamphlet. It talked about the carbs it's got in yours. It's better carbs, simple carbs.
Yeah, it's got complex and simple. It's important to have both.
Mm-hmm. And how many grams of carbs in that when I have that? Because most people, everybody wants to be fucking no carbs no more.
Right, yeah. You know, and I don't have it with me exactly how many grams of carbs are in here. But
see if I have it in here.
But the other thing about it is when you do take the carbs, there's other things in here that are like the picolinate and things like that. They're going to help you get them into your muscles right away so that they're not going and giving you a glycogen spike. And especially having the simple and carb and the complex. There's a few things that have been done there so that you're not. The main thing that people are avoiding carbs, they really don't want to have that glycogen spike is what they don't want, you know?
All right, serving size, calories, 24 grams. Mm-hmm. That's not fucking bad at all. That's perfect.
And a lot of those aren't simple. And that's 24 grams, so that's not per package. Oh, per package, it should be, 24, per package. And a lot of those aren't, so 8 of them are complex carbs. And then 16 of them are simple.
So how long did it take you to come up with this formula? And because it's, I can't imagine it's like the first mix. You're like, okay, it's perfect.
Okay, yeah. So first of all, I didn't come up with it. The guy who came up with it is, his name is Kurt Hong. And he's a MD, he's a PhD. He's went to Harvard Medical School, cellular and molecular pathology at UCLA. He's executive director of the Center for Clinical Nutrition and Applied Health Research at Keck School of Medicine, USC. He's a nationally recognized physician and a nutrition specialist. And he works for the New England Journal of Medicine. He's a really smart guy. He's the one who came up with it. And when he took on the task, he did some research. He didn't just whip it out, from boilerplate. I mean, just his students could whip something up, but he actually spent some time researching and put a lot of thought into this. And it took 2.5 years. And yes, it took a lot of different trial and error. The taste wasn't right. It didn't mix right. Things like that. A lot went into it.
It's crazy how many ways there are in today's society. Another thing that's changed, how to take care of yourself.
Right.
How to really get the most of your workouts. Jesus Christ. When I first started fucking around with this, I never knew I'd still be interested in this at the age of 50. I never thought I'd be alive at 50. Never mind interested in this. And I'm more interested in jiu-jitsu than I ever was anything before. Like, it's keeping me alive lately. Like, it's the anchor in my day. Awesome. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a great thing. I like going over there. I like sweating. I don't care if I suck. I'm just going to keep going, and eventually I'll get it. Mm-hmm. In time, Alberto has to give you belts. He'll give you the belt. But eventually, it could be at the brown belt level. One day, I'll wake up and I go, "Oh, I get it. I got to pull here and push there." Whatever. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter to me. Like, I have a child, and I want to be healthy for that child. It's so weird how, I've been stuck at a certain weight for the last couple of weeks. But my shirts are bigger, my pants are bigger. I'm doing more in jiu-jitsu. When I first got there, I couldn't get past the fucking warm up. Mm-hmm. So my first couple of weeks was just doing the warm-up effectively, doing it to form. I told Lee that the guy told me, he goes, "For conditioning, I just don't want you to stop. I don't believe in you going over to the corner and breathing heavy. I don't believe in that. So this is what I want you to do." He goes, "Instead of doing 20 fucking jumping jacks, do 10. Do 10 of everything at first, but I want you just to work on the form. And if you're out of breath, I still want you to get in your push-up position. Just don't do push-ups. Maybe do number 3, 4, and 5. And the next time you do it, do number 2. Mm-hmm. But he goes, "I just don't want you stopping, And all these little things help me. Like, mm-hmm. today, I had to carry Mercy from my house to the corner today. And I did it. I could never do that.
Was it like, were you doing like a farmer's walk just by yourself?
No, she just didn't want to walk this morning to school. I'm like, "Are you fucking serious?" Because my cardio is shit when I first wake up in the morning. I get real anxiety if I could do something real quick. I got to move around a little bit. I had to pick her up, and she only weighs 30 pounds, but it's a fucked up heavy pound, and I had to walk down the fucking street with her. And I kept making personal goals to myself.
If I
make it to that tree, I'll put it down. And I made it to the tree, and I could still breathe. I just slowed down a little bit but kept holding her. And even though I felt like putting her down, I go, "If I can make it to that driveway," and I made it all the way to the fucking corner. And I was dead. Oh, my God. I started fucking sweating from every orifice. I couldn't stop. My body went into shock. But you know what? 6 weeks ago, I couldn't walk to the corner with her. Not even close.
Jiu-jitsu, right?
Not even close. Uh-huh. No. Breathing. Mm-hmm. Breathing. It's not jiu-jitsu. It's I wasn't breathing. I was holding. And I still catch myself over there holding my breath. Okay. Saturday, this Saturday, I'm going to a breathing seminar at Anthony Hardock School.
Okay.
She's a lady.
Yeah, I heard about this.
Time of flex. So I'm going to go down. I've been talking to that lady for about 4 months now. We've been talking on the phone, and she gives me little exercises to do. But this week I'm going down on Saturday from 4 to 7. Yeah. I'm going to go work that out. I'm taking the steroids now to lower the inflammation in my nose. Mm-hmm. So when I go back to the doctor, I can breathe a little better. This time I'll take like a shroom tech. That's an Onnit product. That's mm-hmm. a quadricep mushroom that gives you more oxygen when you're breathing. Sometimes I get so much oxygen from those shroom techs, I get anxiety. Like, really? Too much fucking air. You know what I'm saying? Like, too much is coming in. And I'm fucking dying.
I got to try those.
Yeah, I should have got you some. I just got the last thing, and I opened it up. If not, I would have brought you some. But I'll get you some Shroom Tech Sport, some Shroom Tech Immune.
Okay.
They're fucking good. They're really good. You know, if you fly, the Shroom Tech Immune is good. And if you work out, the Shroom Tech Sport is really good because it's those mushrooms that are growing up in high altitude.
Mm-hmm.
So it prepares your body for high altitude. You know, Rogan will explain a lot more to you. Yeah. You got to go on. I'm terrible when it comes to that shit, man. Mm. And now how can they get this? How can they get the
F2? So they can get the F2 Fight Formula at F2FightFormula.com. And, you know, follow us on Instagram, F2 Fight Formula. You'll be able to find it in there. And, you'll be able to get it at F2FightFormula.com. Just punch it in, go to the website, and you can buy it right there.
One flavor?
It's citrus flavor. Yeah, it's like a citrus.
Right, it's good. It's a
good flavor. And what I like about it is I did not realize, for me, the biggest thing about this is I didn't realize that how I'm normally depleted whether I've been working out or not. Just because I don't pay enough attention to my hydration or to the getting these micronutrients in. And so taking this 2 or 3 times a week after my workouts, I have a general overall better feeling. Like, everything feels better. And that's what I noticed. That's the biggest thing I noticed about it. And it's like, I feel like, man, it's a shame that I spent a lot of my life depleted and not taking care of myself, you know?
Whenever I go for a blood test, they always say, drink more water.
Mm-hmm.
You're not drinking enough water. And I think it's the fucking edibles, especially if I eat one of them at night. You wake up at 4 a.m. thirsty as fuck, Jack. Thirsty as fuck. So the rep school is sold out.
Yeah. You know, so I'm going to be doing my rep school on June 3rd, 4th, and 5th. It's full, so I'm going to be probably doing another date soon. People are reaching out to me. I'm actually going to start taking people for the next date. I'll probably do it in fall, and during the fall. Usually I only do it once a year, but it seems like a lot of people want to do one. And also, I want to keep the size of the class low because it's just better when I work with, I mean, you know, when I've worked with groups of over 20, it's too many people, so I keep it definitely under 20. Right around 15 is good. So I think I'm going to drop it up into 2 classes this year. So I'll do another one probably around October.
And then go to the webpage.
Yeah, go to herbdean.com.
Fuck
yeah. Herbdean.com and check it out. Yeah.
Do you got planned for the weekend over there, fucko?
I'm not sure. I'm not going to see Paul this weekend. So I might go to kettlebells at 8 in the morning on Saturday. They were trying to convince me to do it today. And I was like, 8 in the morning. That's tough. But
Who teaches?
I think Dave. I'm pretty sure Dave does. But it's that's it. I'm going to do that. I'm going to I just did a Life in Neutral yesterday. Just kind of relax.
Okay.
Yeah.
What do you got coming up, my brother?
Oh, man, this weekend I'm at home, so I'm going to relax. I'm going to have a good time and just enjoy L.A. It's a rarity for me.
Then the next couple weeks, the UFC kicks up again.
So after this weekend I'll be home. Then after that, I think where I go this next? Oh, this next one, I think I go down to Florida. And then after Florida, I come back and go to Vegas.
That's the Tampa one.
Yeah, Tampa. Oh,
that's the one that the Russian kid just fell out.
Yeah, then he fell out.
Yeah.
Oh, Kukui fell out.
Yeah, and then the 30th, someone invited me to go down to Trinidad, Tobago, and referee some fights. I really want to do that. But this guy, he hasn't contacted me, so someone just invited me to go to China. So I'm going to make sure he wants me to come. I'm either going to be in Trinidad or I'm going to be in China. Yeah. Then
getting all those frequent flyer miles.
Yeah, man. I try to stay busy, you know. Then sometime or another, I'm going to go to Korea in May. Yeah.
And then you got all the UFC dates and you're everything. You do the Bellator. I do
whatever. If somebody calls me, I go and referee it. That's what I like to do.
You got shit to do and people to motherfucking see.
yeah, that's right.
It's just good to see you, man. I was supposed to fly with you a couple weeks ago. The last UFC, the Conor McGregor one, we were going to meet at 11:30 and fly out of.
Right, yeah.
But I had to move my flight. I had an audition, so I had to move my flight later on. And as I was moving, I go, fuck, I told Herb Dean I'd meet him at the fucking airport, man.
Yeah, when's the next show that you're doing?
Friday, I'm in Santa Barbara with Joe and Tony Hinchcliffe.
Friday, you guys are doing Santa Barbara?
This Friday.
Okay.
And then I'm off all next week, and then I'll be at the Comedy Store. And then the 2 weeks after that, I'm in Buffalo at Helium.
Mm-hmm.
which I dig Buffalo, and then I'm in Indianapolis, and I dig Indianapolis, so it's 2 good weeks back to back.
Right, that sounds like fun.
Yeah, I got Sacramento, and I got Pittsburgh.
Oh, okay.
Then I got Omaha, Nebraska, and I got Philadelphia. I got the Ice House. I got Vegas with Joe for UFC 200 and the Expo. I got Nashville. I got New York, Austin, Columbus, Chicago, Las Vegas. Fuck, I got a hell of a schedule all the way to the end of the year.
When people ask you your favorite place, are you good at picking out favorites? I'm horrible at picking out. People ask me to pick out favorite stuff. I can't pick out a favorite color.
I always think about it when I go home. And here's the deal, that it's favorite for a certain thing.
Right.
Like, you know what I'm saying? That's all. Because I like going. Listen, if I go to your city one time, I don't like it, I won't go back.
Right.
I'm one of those fucking dudes. But I've always found the beauty where I go. Like,
yeah.
There's always a reason that something gets me psyched up about that area.
Right.
Even if there's a hot dog stand in front of the hotel. I just went somewhere where they had a hot dog stand in front of the hotel. I didn't eat any hot dogs, but it made me happy.
right.
Just to know that there's a motherfucking Sabret hot dog stand in front of the fucking hotel. Charlotte, the week before the Super Bowl, a Sabret stand, not just a hot dog stand, but a Sabret stand. But no, I'm only kidding you. Just different things. Like Buffalo, I like the people, and I like the fucking beef on wick sandwich.
Okay.
Indianapolis, this is one place I went to eat that was really good, a steak place. They made like a 6-ounce filet with a nice salad, fucking delicious. And I like the people. The people have to be the best thing about
that
city.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, I like the people when I go to Texas, you know. And then there's places that I don't like, but we all can serve there. We all converse there. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, when you perform in Vegas, I don't really have a home in Vegas, but the South Point. When I do the shows with Joe, a lot of the same people come to those shows, so it's nice seeing them, you know.
Right.
Okay. When I go to Austin, I got a certain amount of people you see. You see Bobby Sharon. When you go to Chicago, you see the crazy dude in the fucking wheelchair, Michael Kern, shows up to all your shows. So you start having relationships with different
with people who are coming to see you.
They're coming. You know, when
like
I go,
some of these, like this guy who sent you the
album. He came to San Jose, okay?
So that's one of the guys who come sees your...
Right. Brandy Lynn came to Minneapolis. Jamie Stanley came to Boston, and she'll come to Connecticut. You know, people like that, they come to different shows.
So and I mean, I think that I have great supporters and great people in the sport. I have a lot of people who follow me and support me. But usually when they reach out, they want something from me. None of them ever reach out to give me little gifts like this.
Yeah.
We
give each other something. We give each other something. You know what I'm saying? Like, we give time and we talk. And sometimes people email me, or sometimes we talk about something that's a subject they've been thinking about. You know, we did a podcast Monday. It was just me and him. People really dug it because we spoke about breaking down different subjects. I got tormented about saying I don't like fucking cartoons. People got pissed off at me and shit. Adult cartoons. I hate adult cartoons. I hate it. I just hate how people get addicted to them. And you're a fucking adult. Get out of the house. If you're telling me you're at home jerking off watching porn, I get it. But when I ask you what are you doing Saturday night, you're telling me you're staying home to watch the Avengers or something because Death Man is on the episode. I want to shoot you. Like, I want to fucking shoot you as a goddamn adult. But that's just my own personal fucking taste on people, you know. Sometimes you just get pissed off. So, but I'm happy you can. I haven't seen you in a while, man.
Yeah, no, it's good
to
be on.
I want to get you back on and just talk some shit on a Wednesday afternoon, you know.
Yeah, it's nice. I like your new digs here. It's nice.
Yeah, no, we don't fuck around here. This is the office of death.
That's right.
We got the hash pipe. We got the record player. You know, you can't lose in this motherfucker.
A mini fridge, that's all you need.
A mini fridge. I mean, this is as good as it gets. Brother, thank you for coming on.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Let me give a shout out to my sponsors, and we'll get you the fuck out of here.
And hit mine one more time.
You got to go now. Whatever you want to do, we'll just take 5 more minutes here. I already gave him a shout out, but let me do it again. My people at Onnit, who I love with all my heart, the Hemp Force Protein. I love I live on the Shroom Tech Sport and the Shroom Tech Immune. I just got the Alpha Brain in little packages that you could just do individual, like in a water bottle. Bam, I bammed those out before jiu-jitsu. You know, before I'm going to write or something, I'm going to stay up and write. Or when I get up early and write, I drink my coffee. I take my fucking heart pressure medication. And then I pop some Alpha Brain with some breakfast and I start writing, whatever. So listen, man, Onnit's been there for me. With the Alpha Brain, Lee and I were talking about it, how they give you 100% money back guarantee if you're not happy with the product, because it's their fucking
flagship.
It's their flagship. So when somebody does that, you kind of go, you know what? I'll try their other stuff. I could sit here for hours and tell you about it. Fuck it. Do me a favor. Go to the webpage and look at all their supplements, from the tea, testosterone booster, to the shroom tech, to the. They just have so many things, and every week they're updating new. You know, Aubrey's out there fucking in the jungles of Peru getting different herbs for you and whatnot. But do me a favor. Go to onnit.com right now. Take a look at the great selection of supplements they have. If you see something you like, go to the box, add it in there, and get 10% off. But before you check out, what are you pressing?
You're pressing the word church.
C-H-U-R-C-H. And get 10% off your order delivered right to your motherfucking door. Okay, just like you with your product.
Yeah, can I hit this again?
Yeah, hit it again.
Yeah. So if you need some fight formula, which you do, everybody needs fight formula, f2fightformula.com. And if you're interested in anything I'm doing, like my referee school, herbdean.com.
See what I'm saying?
f2fightformula.com.
Who's better than you? And he does it with that Isaac Hayes smooth motherfucking voice. You know what I'm saying? Number two, like Lee said, it's baseball season, motherfuckers. It's hot. It's time to get out there. You know, Dodgers were home last week, I think. I'm home next week. I'm going to leave here and look at the schedule. That's one of the things I want to do, you know. And what's the next big event you want to go to? You know, you want to go to, I want to go to Black Sabbath at the Hollywood Bowl. I want to go to David Gilmour Monday night at the Garden. I want to go to a Dodger game next week. Whatever it is, you can bet that someone's going to pay less for better seats. How? Let me tell you how. They use scorebig.com. That's how. You're paying too much for tickets. I talk about it on the show constantly. How these, look, I got a Lakers shirt on today. You think I could afford to go to a Lakers game? Hell no. Between all the markups and the last minute convenience charges, even the print at home fees, you end up paying courtside prices for nosebleed seats. ScoreBig.com is here to change this, all right? Did you know that 40% of all live events go unsold? All the live event tickets go unsold. Did you know that there's a place to get these seats at huge savings? You know what it's called? ScoreBig.com. ScoreBig works directly with your favorite teams and artists to get their unsold seats at unpublished prices. Only at ScoreBig.com can you name a ticket price. Name a ticket price and be guaranteed to pay below box office, up to 60% off. Here's exactly what you do. One, go to ScoreBig.com and find the event and the seat that you want. Two, make an offer with ScoreBig's name, a ticket price feature. Three, get an instant answer and save up to 60% on your ticket. It's baseball season. It's America's fucking game. Get it together, cocksuckers. No surprise fees, and free shipping, bitch. Just unbeatable prices on great seats. And when you're in great seats, you actually enjoy the game and the show a lot more. So do me a favor. Next time you see any game or show, next time you want to go see any game or show, go to ScoreBig first and see how much you can save. Go to scorebig.com right now. Click on the microphone. Enter the promo code Joey. The promo code is Joey, J-O-E-Y, and you'll save an extra 20% off your first ticket price, okay? That's scorebig.com, promo code Joey. ScoreBig.com, promo code Joey to get 60% off at your name, your price tickets, all right? There you go. So don't say I didn't fucking tell you. Go to scorebig.com right now. Also, very important, I'm doing this breathing seminar. So today I saw the post on Facebook about maximize your breathing, and I went on.
I've heard about this stuff. Yeah, she's amazing. She's great.
And one of the things she talks about in there is meditation. I didn't take the class, but one of the things she talks about in that breathing is meditating. And I get what she's saying. When you see the high-level Javier Vasquez, those high-level jiu-jitsu guys, they breathe a certain way. They breathe as they move. And what she's saying is what I'm trying to say is that you just keep breathing and not stop. Once you stop, it's like fucking you fall behind the eight ball. You're done. But one of the things she talks about was meditate. All right? Meditation, like I said, I didn't know dick about meditation, so I got confused in Boulder, and I started going up to Chautauqua on Monday nights for walking meditation, and then I started doing it, sitting down and thinking about it and visualizing, and it's all great and dandy. It really does work. But let's be honest. Most of your problems start with your mind. Fear, anger, stress, anxiety, depression, sleeplessness. They begin in your head, but they can wreck your life, okay? And we all know that. But it doesn't have to be that way. You can make a major difference in just 10 minutes a day. 10 minutes a day. This change comes through guided meditation with the new Headspace app. Headspace is meditation made simple. It's guided meditations that you listen to whenever you want, wherever you want, right on your phone, computer, or tablet. Meditation is rooted in thousands of years of tradition with thousands, I'm talking thousands of scientific studies that show its positive effects like improving focus, relationship harmony, and decreasing anxiety and stress. Join over 4 million users already getting some Headspace for free right now. Do me a favor, man. I had this anxiety stuff, and I downloaded the 10 steps that they're talking about in here. The 10 Take program.
It's the Headspace app, and it's the Take 10 program.
Take 10 program. And I'll tell you what, I haven't had that much anxiety. It's just breathing. It's just looking straight ahead, closing your eyes, working on your third eye. You know, download the free Headspace app and begin their Take 10 program for 10 days of guided meditation at headspace.com/Joey. The Headspace Take 10 program is a 100% free way to experience the benefits of meditation in your busy modern life. Train your mind for a healthier, less stressed life. Start with your free trial today. Go to headspace.com/Joey. That's Headspace. That's headspace.com/Joey. All right? And do me a favor. If you want to reference anything, go to Andy Pettacombe's TED Talk, which has over 5 million views. It should come up to Google. Just Google Andy Pettacombe TED Talk. Andy's the founder of Headspace and the voice you hear on the app. All right? You don't need to put aside loads of time or immigrate to Tibet. Andy did that for you. Just do me one favor. Go to headspace.com/Joey and start your free trial today. All right? I want to thank Headspace, Score Big, On It, and my main motherfucking man, Herb Dean, for coming down today and turning us on to some F2. And we talked about music and everything the fuck else. Thank you, my brother. Hey,
thank you.
And I will see you at UFC 200.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, see you there, brother.
All right. Lee, what's up with you, my brother?
Just go check out Life in Neutral. Johnny Rock and I, he's a young comic in LA. We had a great time yesterday. We've done about 14 episodes and it's growing. And that's it. I have t-shirts for sale. Just go to leesiat.com. But I had a great time and I'll see you guys next week.
Stay black, cocksuckers.
This show is brought to you by ScoreBig. Go to scorebig.com and enter the promo code Joey right now to get $20 off of your first ticket purchase. You can go to see any game, any show. Go to ScoreBig first and see how much you can save. That's scorebig.com and enter promo code Joey when you click on the microphone in the top right-hand corner. Show is also brought to you by Headspace.com. Go to Headspace.com right now and enter promo code Joey and download the brand new Headspace app and begin their Take 10 program for 10 days of guided meditation. That's Headspace.com/Joey. And use code word church at onit.com to get 10% off of all their great optimization products like Alpha Brain and New Mood. That's onit.com and use code word church.
Something after all. Now you know this ain't no through street. Somebody down.